But when war was declared, we were evacuated to the north of England, to Preston, just
to
before. It was because they were evacuating all the pregnant women and children and so on from the East End when they saw the air raids coming. They were evacuating them to the cities in the north and all over the place. And so all these young girls between the ages of 16 and 20 were suddenly told that morning we arrived at work on September the the last day of August, probably the 30th or 31st of August, we arrived at work and were told that we were catching a train that day to go up to the north of England and go home. To work to be, our job was, we were told that our job would be to pay out the money to the allowances and the sort of bureaucracy that was running where these people were going, mainly paying them, I think, part of the clerical staff up in Preston. And we had to go home and pack a suitcase and go and catch a train and go up to the Preston, Lancashire. I've never been to the north of England. To me, it was a foreign land.
Has it been out of London?
Well, on holidays to the seaside, but that was just around the coast. I'd never really been, other than the organised trip to Northern Ireland, I'd never been anywhere. And,
You've been on the coastline as far as Cornwall, haven't you, on holidays?
Yes, on holidays, with parents.
The south.
Yes, it was always the south, the north, gosh, that was another land completely. So, off we went to London,
How long were you there?
Well, I only stayed 4 days. The rest of them, Joyce Lutemore, who I went with, was there the whole war. She was there the whole war, but this was another running away. Like I sort of dropped out of school. This was my second running away.
So you had to resign?
Yes, I resigned after our third war declared. I was in a milk bar and heard Neville Chamberlain. September 3rd,
was it?
Yes, September 3rd.
In a milk bar?
Yes, Joyce and I and the other two girls I was with it was Sunday, and we were going to go to Blackpool that day, and we had been buying newspapers, thinking all the time that, you know, we heard Poland had been invaded, but up to the last minute we thought it couldn't be that we'll really be at war, and we didn't want to be, and suddenly this man said, the Prime Minister's declaring war. And so we went into this milk bar and they had the radio full on and we heard this declaration of war. And so I found a phone box right after hearing the declaration of war. And of course we didn't go to Blackpool, I've still never been to Blackpool. And I found a phone box and phoned Abe Grenner, phoned my parents, and said, you know, what shall I do? And so they put Pat on, he was there with them that Sunday. He said, well, come home today. He said, come via the, and my father said, come home, you know. So I went back to the house where I had got this room in the house. We couldn't all be in the same house and we had to find our own deep. And this elderly couple let me have a room that hadn't been used for years and it had a feather.
You wanted to go back to London and the bombing. I was thinking that you would have escaped the danger of the bombing in London.
I wanted to be bombed with the rest of the family. We thought it was you know, I didn't want to be stuck up there. And anyway, feather bed had been preserved in mothballs and there were those awful fly papers hanging down right over it, covered with...
And how old were you? 18, 19?
I was 19. Yes, I was 19. The big kid, my one thought was to get back, so I went back to this place and wrote a letter sending it, resigning from the job, and went to the station to get my ticket, and these girls were coming with me, Joyce and the other two whose names I can't remember, and they came along to the railway station, and I said I wanted a ticket for London, and this man behind the counter said, "London? You don't want to go back to London?" "What?" he declared. He said, "London will be bombed tonight." So I said, "Well, I'm going back. My home's there." So I got this train back to London. And the train was full of... into a carriage that was, I was the only female there, and it was full of very, people in, soldiers in uniform, a whole crowd of soldiers. There was a terrifically strong smell of kippers. I don't know who had kippers, whether they bought some in paper bags, but I was in this carriage, and they were all very jolly and nice to me, and I was sitting there terribly squashed in with all these soldiers in a carriage. And then a woman kept walking, came down the corridor and looked into this carriage, and she had got on dark glasses and her hair in a bun, and she came back and looked in the carriage, and on about her third trip, she beckoned me, and I looked and then she said, "Come with me." And so I went down, it was one of these corridor trains, and she took me right down about three carriages, and then she took me into a first class carriage that she was sitting in all alone. And the blinds were down, and there was a terribly dim light on, and she sat down and picked up a book and went on reading it, and I sat down, and I'd heard of the white slave traffic, and I thought, she's going to inject me with a needle. I felt much safer amongst the soldiers. I thought this woman looked most sinister. And in any case, I was all alone, and so I arrived at Victoria, I think it was Victoria Station, it was one of the big London stations, and this was my first experience of total blackout. I think they'd had it for two or three nights, but it was total blackout. I didn't know how I was going to find my way back to Richmond. So by this time I'd nearly run out of money, but I groped my way in the blackout and got a taxi and thought, well, my father will pay. And so I arrived in a taxi at 8 Greenwich late that night. And
the taxi's managed in the blackout.
Oh, there was very dim light. They had to manage, didn't they?
But they did have dim light.
What did they have?
I don't know. This was right at the very start of the
world. They had hardly dim light.
Later on, they had
blackout.
Things over the headlights with a slit in them, and they had a little slit of light coming up, but very little. And they had, I don't really know how they managed it, but they did.
Yeah, one of Pat's and my friends, Usher, Charles Usher, he was killed the first night of the blackout by stepping off a curb in front of a taxi. There were an awful lot of casualties from until people got used to the blackout. In fact, I don't know if people ever did. You know, when you have no street lights at all, no headlights on the car, and you've got taxis and things driving around in the blackout. So it was very scary, that trip back.
But then, you'd really be aware that the war was on.
Oh, yes.